Welcome to Just Between Us Girls. This is Columbus's hub for inclusive conversations on building success in male-dominated fields. Whether it's through empowerment, support, or advocacy, we talk all things professional development and breaking the glass ceiling. You ready?
Time you say.
All right. All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Just Between Us Girls. I am your host, Ariane Damian, with Thompson Restoration Associates, and today we have...
Bob Weiler with Robert Weiler Company.
All right, Bob. And will you also state your position at the Bob Weiler, or rather, Robert Weiler Company?
Sure. I'm chairman of the board. Been with the company ever since graduated from college many years ago.
Yeah. Not that many, right?
It was that many.
So, Bob, I will just have you introduce a little bit of what you do with your company.
Sure.
And what that looks like.
Thank you, Ariana. Well, our company was started by my dad in 1938, so 86 years ago. And we call ourselves a full-service real estate company. We go by the acronym ABCD, Appraisal, Brokerage, Consulting, and Development. And we do some management, too, so the management company would like to be in there. So we decided to make it A, B, C, D, E, and put everything in there so we get the management company.
But there you go.
The main two things we do are brokerage, which my son Skip is president of the company, and appraisal, which I've been doing forever. And we have a lady named Melissa Spirit, who's president, and she's been with us over 20 years. I mention that because... not too many appraisal companies are headed by a woman, and our two top people are women, and they're not the only two. So we're a small company, but I'm very proud to say we're a very diverse company.
Yeah, that's one of the things I actually appreciated about. So the reason we got connected is our first guest on the podcast, Matt Gregory, essentially said, hey, here's who I think should be the next guest. And I got excited for two things. Number one, I went on your About Us website, and I had met Skip at like an IRM event or something.
Sure.
And I was like, yeah, he's got a lot of personality.
He is.
So I was sure somewhere along the lines came from you.
Yeah, he's got a big personality, loves to sell, loves mm-hmm. people, which you need to do when you're selling.
Yeah.
But it's hard today to get people who really want to be, he's president of the company, but also selling too. And he's, I'll brag a little bit, he was the youngest $25 million salesperson at the Columbus Board of Realtors. It's not called Columbus Realtors, but yeah, he loves to sell. He doesn't want to get too bogged down with facts, you know. Mm-hmm. Give him an address and a price and he's gone.
And he's ready to go.
I am on the appraisal side, which is much more research and writing and trying to reflect the actions of buyers and sellers. So we write appraisal reports. Mm-hmm. I've been doing that most of my adult life. And I mentioned Melissa, who's now heading the company. We're small, though. Mm-hmm. Unlike Matt Gregory, we have a total of 20.
Mm-hmm.
And on the brokerage side, which Skip leads, he has about 7 or 8 salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very proud to say it's very diverse.
Yeah.
3 are African-American. One's a Chinese lady who was adopted from China.
Mm-hmm.
And on the appraisal side, as I mentioned, most appraisal offices are men,
mm-hmm.
which leads us into, I think, maybe a discussion about the lack of women in many fields. And in real estate, we have no lack of women in terms of residential salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's probably slightly more than 50%, but it didn't used to be that way.
Yeah.
And it certainly is not that way in commercial fields, and I'm sure Matt Gregory told you. There are very few women who are in commercial and industrial real estate.
Yeah.
Probably getting ahead of myself.
Just a little, but we'll get there.
Once you ask me a question, I don't stop talking.
Yeah.
My wife used to tell me I had a love affair with a microphone.
I get told the same thing. So I find this to be such an interesting thing because on our last episode, we were talking about you have to see where you've been to see where you're going.
Yeah.
And that is really one of the things I wanted to discuss with you, is because a lot of the stuff that we're talking about, especially with, so your father was part of the group of people that got women to be able to be inducted onto the Columbus Board of Realtors. And that was 1956 or 57?
Yeah, 1955, he was president of the board. And his year, they had a vote, believe it or not, it was very close, and they turned it down. All men voting, of course.
Of course.
And then after that, the next year, women were taken in. But it's not just in the Board of Realtors. I mean, we can talk about other professions, legal professions, say, what is wrong with us? But that's the way it was back, you know, 75 to 90 years ago.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the times, even when we're discussing these disparities and just the fact that this is so ongoing, people feel like, oh, the first woman inducted on the Columbus Board of Realtors, that must have been forever ago. And it wasn't that long ago.
No.
And
the first woman was Myrna Cobrey. And I want to say it was in the 70s. I can't tell you exactly. Since then, the good news is probably the last 15, 20 years, it's been about as many women as men.
Yeah.
But it took a long time for that to happen.
Yeah. Well, with it being March and Women's History Month, thank you for bringing Myrna to the table, because when you talk about trailblazers and people that are the first to do anything, not only is that a trying experience for whoever it is, but one of the things that I know we were going to get into today is about being a lone wolf and about how tokenism really is an issue when you're looking at trying to introduce a population into a group, specifically a career. One of the things that you really see is the person that deemed good enough, right? We've got this commercial real estate broker. She's awesome. And then that person, that woman, is passed around between different organizations or used as the token for, hey, look, we checked the box. We got a woman.
You're right. Well, we checked the box for president of the United States. We had one African-American man. So, okay, now we're diverse. No women, by the way, either. No women, period. But you're right. I think we say, well, you can see that we're open-minded because we have one token.
Yeah.
And that's so true on corporate boards. And it seems like there are just a few who are almost recycled, so that you have, without naming names, but people who are on the board, trustees of prominent educational institution or nonprofit, big foundations and such, it's often a very small number.
Yeah.
And it's sad, because I think we tend to associate with and welcome in people who act like us, look like us, talk like us, live with us, go to places with us.
An echo chamber,
exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. And if you're not in that echo chamber, you have trouble getting in. And so and I don't like to be negative. You can't be negative and sell real estate or sell anything.
No, you can't.
But there are people who, unfortunately, either out of closed minds or out of fear, I don't know, you'll have to tell me the reasoning, but it is still a very segregated world we live in and country.
It is. It's something that I found very interesting when you were talking about your home buying experience and how you were kind of told not to buy in this particular neighborhood because it just wasn't, you know, what it was going to be yet. Let's put it that way.
Well, when I first came into real estate, now this goes back into the 50s, there was a pamphlet long since trashed, destroyed, and forgotten as possible by as many as possible, but I can still remember it very clearly. And this pamphlet was the do's and don'ts in real estate. And one of them was, and this gets to blockbusting, which, and discrimination in housing. You, as a broker, could not sell a home to a minority, typically African-American, in any block unless there's already one family living there. Well, that's a catch-22 unless you sell you know, without a broker.
Yeah.
And so there won't be any. And that was just a way of keeping neighborhoods lily white for the most part.
Yeah.
And like you say, what happened back then has its influence on what's happening today. You look at your suburbs today, it's not an accident, and I don't want to name names, but we know what I'm talking about, where the minority population is low single digits, while our city is maybe 15%. So it's not an accident that it's happening that way.
Yeah. Having just one of anything is not helpful. When you have this echo chamber, the same ideas are pretty much passed around. You know what's going to go through and what's not, because this is your crowd of people. This is what you've got. And but yet, you know, when you're the only woman in the room, for example,
yes,
it is a lot more trying to bring ideas to the table, to bring what you were supposedly brought to that table to have, because you're the lone wolf. You aren't going to have the same kind of support that you would even from just having another woman in the room.
Yes.
And I want to talk to you a little bit because it's very interesting to me. So one of the first things you said when we sat down for our last meeting, you sat in and you said, I am the epitome of white male privilege.
No question about it.
And I really, really wonder what has altered your perspective in terms of the way that you see diversity and the need to have women at the table, the interest in making sure that women are well represented on your team. What do you think has made the difference for you?
Well, I would say two of the people who've had the most influence on my life, my mother and my wife of 67 years, 4 months and 14 days. And both of them were very open and well aware of what the situation was. They were way, my mom was way ahead of her time, mm-hmm, in many ways. And I can remember just, this is one instance, when I was at Bexley, which, mm-hmm, was almost all white.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in about the third or fourth grade, and we had one African-American family. And Paul, I won't tell you his last name, although I'm not sure he's still here even, but Paul, I asked Paul, why not come home with me after school? And he did. And it caused tongues to wag. What's your son doing? And my mom said, he's bringing home a classmate.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was way ahead. I mean, but I think we get into the silo you're talking about, and we don't really experience anybody outside of those who look and act like us.
Yeah.
To me, that's the big issue we have.
Yeah. And I think that one of the things, too, is the fact that we can't be blind to the differences that having people that are different from us brings to the table. These people bring different experiences,
oh, absolutely,
bring different perspective, and bring an ability to analyze a situation from a different purview. One of the things I'm so glad that you said was the fact that looking at your wife and looking at your mother was something that affected the way that, you know, obviously you look at women overall. And when we had the conversation a little bit about, like, what do you think created that difference? What created the stir in the room when people were saying, do we allow women onto the Columbus Board of Realtors? And I had in my notes, one of the things you said was, well, men decided they couldn't discriminate against their wives any longer.
No, that's about it. And even against their daughters. Many years ago, we had the university club. Mm-hmm. We had lots of clubs. Women weren't allowed in the Columbus Club, the Athletic Club, the University Club. University clubs, based on having a certain academic level, they, yeah, said you had to graduate college or something. But the university club didn't let women in. And I can still remember an annual meeting we had.
Mm-hmm.
And a relative of my brother's, Artie Isaac is his name. And his son, Artie, is a wonderful guy, lives in Antioch. But his dad stood up in an annual meeting and said, we're voting on whether or not we take in women. My son's a member, and I'm going to go home and tell my daughter she can't be. Unfortunately, he had to go home and tell his daughter that, because, mm, at that particular meeting, it was still not enough votes to have women members. I mean, we think about it now, and I mean, it's mind-blowing that that we had that precious. It's that deep seated. And mm-hmm. Somebody a lot smarter than I am, and there are a lot of people out there who are, would tell me, could tell me what the reason is. The only thing I can think is there's a fear or insecurity, and we don't want to give away any of our business to women, so we're going to keep them out. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but thankfully, it's breaking down.
Yeah.
Not everywhere, but the clubs I mentioned.
Yeah.
Part of it broke down out of economic reasons. I mean, the university club I mentioned, I think they realized we don't take in women. We're getting men who are dropping out. Mm-hmm. Many of us said, if you don't take in women, we're out of here. And tried to use the economic lever to, and I think that probably has much to do with their saying, okay, we're going to start taking in women.
Unfortunately, it seems like a lot of the reasoning behind things is very logistically based. You know, they when we look at how women are typically stereotyped across the board, it's emotional. Yeah. It's, you know, too soft or too whatever to be able to handle some of the grit that comes with business. And yet, on the other side, women are raising our children. Right. Women are running our households.
Oh, I hear the expression, like in real estate, she is so assertive. And the guy, he's good. He's aggressive. Well, that is aggressive, assertive. I have to look up our synonyms. It's not that far apart. But you could switch it and say, but it's like men, it's okay for men to be aggressive, right? Because they're strong and they should be aggressive. But women, they should stand back a little bit. She's kind of in your face. The guy's in your face. He's a powerful salesman.
Right.
We have different standards, and I think part of that is historical.
Things can take on different connotation based on the lens you view them on.
Exactly, and I think we viewed women in the past as not really supposed to be in certain places. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be at home. They're supposed to be cooking and knitting and taking care of the kids. They're not supposed to be out selling or riding a tractor or heavy equipment or doing commercial brokerage or parade. They're not supposed to be there. But again, I think I hope we're starting to understand that we can't do that. But getting back to the earlier statement, I'll stand by it. I say, particularly in housing, we are as segregated, if not more so, than over 65 years ago when I came into the business.
Yeah. I think that, in particular, one of the things that really struck me was when you were talking about the strides we've made in residential versus commercial. Yeah. And the fact that in residential, you know, women started killing the game because women were selling to other women.
Exactly.
A lot of the times, the people that, you know, the population that was being knocked out by the prior, you know, sales generation or whatever. Now, when you introduced all these new people, they were the people that could reach into these untapped markets. And that's what bringing diversity in, period, across the board, I think, makes a difference in, is you can reach untapped potential, whether it's in business, whether it's in, you know, ability to overcome an issue. Like, absolutely, you can truly extend the tentacles of your business.
No, I agree entirely. And I think the fact that you have a diversity to bring in different ideas coming add to the strength of it all. The analogy I give is when you make something out of steel, there are all kinds of different alloys that come together to make it stronger.
Yeah.
And that's basically what you have.
Absolutely.
But in the past, again, women selling to women, I think partly now, when you think about it, for the men, we still have, I think, a higher percentage of men working than women among couples.
Mm-hmm.
And for, I'll just speak for myself, I'd like to have a bed to sleep in. I've been in the same house since we got married. My wife said, anywhere you want to live is fine. But once we live there, we're staying.
That's it. And we're planted.
I'm still in the same bedroom I was when 67 years ago when I got married, same place.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, again, this is just a generalization because obviously in some cases you have a man who's at home and his wife's out working. But often it's the women who care more about the layout and the kitchen and the mm-hmm. decor and everything than the man does.
Mm-hmm.
I may be way off.
I think that's a fair statement. Yeah, yeah, I think that's a fair statement. And I think that, when we're talking about major setbacks overall that have really, one of the things that we talked about is, you know, with it being a, almost like a boys club, right? Yeah. The father passes it along to the son and so on and so forth. And that's kind of how it goes. One of the major setbacks that just really started the playing field completely off was the fact that traditionally women were homemakers and people that were, you know, not even considered to be in career roles for a long, long time.
Yes.
And when we talk about leveling the playing field, it takes so much more to get things to a place where they're even, but it's not about one group being over the other. And that's one of the things when people are discussing women's empowerment, women's professional development. People are like, well, you're just going to tell me all the women need to come in here and they need to be running everything. And it's like, no, we just need to have equal representation, equal pay, like let it be even.
Absolutely. Well, one place that I think is really important is in the banking world.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at bankers, who's head of banks? Well, corporations too. Who are the head people? I dare say if you took the Fortune 500 companies, said who's chairman of the board, who's the CEO, who's the CFO, who's the COO,
mm-hmm.
and multiply that times all 500, I'd be willing to say it's over 90% are white males,
mm-hmm.
over 90%. And I say bankers particularly because the money is where the action is today.
Yeah.
And you need money to buy buildings or buy houses or anything else. Well, who's making the decision? It's white men making the decision.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I think when you say about, you know, catching up or leveling the field, I don't like to use the word leveling the field because it makes it look like we're pulling somebody down,
mm-hmm.
like a teeter-totter. I'd rather say, let them stay up here and bring the other side of the teeter-totter up.
Yeah.
And it's not going to happen if we talk about increase of wages on a percentage basis.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you start off and you're making $15 and I'm making $30, and you go up 5%, you're going to go up a dollar, whatever. And I go up 5%, I'm going up twice what you're going up because I'm starting twice as high. So increases by percentage is not helping any. And that's why, this is just my opinion here,
mm-hmm.
we have more billionaires by far than we've ever dreamt of having, and millionaires. And why? It's because their income's going up 5 to 10%. Percentage-wise, it's going up even more than those in the lower bracket.
Yeah.
And I know I sound like a socialist or Bernie Sanders or something. I got to tell you something. Socialism doesn't sound too bad if you're in the lower half of the economic scale.
Mm-hmm.
If you're up on the top 5%, no, I don't like socialism. You know what that means? That means I'm giving to those, I'm giving.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're not giving because how'd you get there in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
You got there in the first place off the backs of those people who are down here.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't buy that at all. All I say is at least try to have a system where those who are making minimum wage, and it just so happens that's a very current topic in today's paper. And the unions are saying $15 is not unreasonable, it's not a lot. And unfortunately, the Chamber of Commerce, the executives are saying, we can't afford $15. Well, who's saying we can't afford it? It's people, and this is generalization, but I think it takes in a lot of the folks. The people who say we can't pay it are making six figures and more.
Yeah.
They don't know what it feels like.
To be on the other side.
To be on the low side, yeah.
Yeah. And that's actually, I'm kind of glad that you brought up this example because it's all about perspective, right?
Yes.
It's all about, until it's kind of knocking at your door, you don't think that it's really a big deal a lot of the times. And I think that the way that we shape our lives and experiences really help us with what lens we see things through. And I think that's why we need to surround ourselves with more people that think differently than us, are different ages than us, come from different socioeconomic backgrounds than us.
Absolutely.
One of the things I mentioned on the last podcast episode was that diversity is not just about black and white. It's about having young and old, having people that grew up, you know, maybe better off, grew up not well off.
Absolutely.
And being able to have those different people, because when you're rubbing shoulders with the people that things have affected, even if it hasn't affected you, you have a direct link to this issue. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things, especially now, like people looking around at their wives, daughters, etc., can say, oh, you know what, maybe this isn't that fair.
And here's the point I'm trying to make too. Those who are making decisions are often making decisions for those who are not in their economic class. They're often making decisions for what the enrollment fee will be for students, but they're not impacted by it. It's not like a hardship for them.
Right.
And that's the difficulty we have. I don't care if it's in our U.S. Senate. I mean, how many of our 100 senators, I guess it is, how many are not millionaires? Probably count one. I don't know if there are any. But when what I'm saying is, I think the class that you mentioned is as important as anything. Now, there's a very close tie-in, I think, mm-hmm. with race and class mm-hmm. and women to an extent.
Yeah.
Because when you start thinking about the lower income and the poor, what's the first thing you think about? You think, oh, it must be a poor African American. Mm-hmm. When you think of crime, what do you think about? Oh, it must be crime. Why? Well, if you look on the TV, and I haven't done any study on this, but I swear every time I turn on the TV, I see someone of color. Mm-hmm. You can't tell me that every crime is that way, but it seems like it is.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to the women issue, though, I think there are still many fields where women have not yet entered into the field,
mm-hmm.
partly because I think in the education area, and I go back to my mom and how lucky I was when I said I'm a white privileged guy, no question about it. Both my parents, who were born right after the turn of the century, were college graduates. It's very unusual. My dad, University of Pennsylvania, 1924, very unusual. My mom, Smith College, which was a college for women. And I can remember my mom saying, you ask, you know, about my mom, my wife had most influence, I think, in this area. And my mom said she went to college. Women went to college back in the 20s to get a husband. Education-wise, mm-hmm. the only real three areas open to them were nursing, mm-hmm. secretarial, and teaching. And so those three areas.
And it's interesting you say that, because that being the focus all those years ago, now look at where a majority of our women, career-wise, are settled in.
And look at the economic levels, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a whole bunch of teachers in my family, including my wife, who's a volunteer in the Columbus schools for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about teachers being overpaid. Please. The amount of work they do and the brains they have, if they were out in the private sector, in many cases, they'd be making two and three times that. You don't go into teaching for the money.
Yeah.
And now you don't go into nursing for the money.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like you say, you entrust your kids with nurses and with those who are sitting at with your kids' daycare and such. Is there a reason why we're keeping women out of the high-paying jobs? Is there a reason why women are not at the top level of corporations? They're not running. And again, I don't want to make it universal that every corporation's by men, but we do have in our city mm-hmm. Women at the top, but I can name almost all of them. That's how few there are.
Yeah.
And especially in what I consider the male-dominated areas of construction, my field,
mm-hmm.
Engineering.
Mm-hmm.
We may have 30 engineering companies that are active in this community. I'd be shocked if there are more than five that are led by women.
Yeah, I mean, that is something, even when you're thinking about, you know, what you said there with, we trust women to raise our children. We trust women to nurse our sickly. And yet a lot of the times for those same attributes that we say you would be really good at the things that form our society, we almost deteriorate those attributes when it comes to doing things that require more logistical skills, such as certain career or business things. Yeah. And I think one of the biggest things that women do bring to the table is that ability to mesh those skills. Yeah. And bring the logic, but also bring the reason and bring, you know, that just that touch that you need if you're going to be working with clients and building relationships and building communities, which is what real estate is all about.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, with some closing thoughts here, what would you like the audience to move away with from this episode in regards to progressing? And what would you say to other men that are in your position, for example, across different institutions or organizations?
Well, I can only speak from my own situation. Mm-hmm. And that is, I did absolutely nothing to have what I have today. I think it was St. Thomas Aquinas says, what do you have that you haven't been given? Nothing. What did I do to be born in this country? What did I do to have the parents I mentioned who were both college graduates? Nothing. And so I would say, just do some reflection and realize what you have is because you were fortunate enough to have won the lottery to be born in this country. One out of 20, roughly, in this country, live in this country, if the people on the globe, about one out of 20, which is about a number on the the wheel of the Las Vegas wheel.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Okay, you know what I mean? And, but what I'm saying is, I think if you realize that in many cases, mine included, we have so much more than we need to live on. In many cases, with the multimillionaires and billionaires, and it's easy for me to say, give away your money. I'm just saying, I think you'll find, I found, you have a lot more pleasure out of giving than receiving. And I've been so fortunate, and my partner of over 50 years, mm-hmm. and we're in the process and have been of downsizing. That is, we're not going to take it with us, so we're in the process of contributing a number of our apartment projects to a nonprofit.
That's incredible.
And people say, oh, that's wonderful. It's not really wonderful. There's no sacrifice, absolutely no sacrifice there. What's really wonderful is when people who are on a tight budget give $5 to church when the hat comes around or whatever it is. That's a sacrifice. But what I am trying to say is realize how fortunate we are to be living here and to be able to have all the comfort, and then recognize what are we doing with the additional amount.
Yeah.
And if you're not happy with what you have, how will having more make you happier? It won't. And I think that would be my conclusion is happiness is, you get joy out of helping others much more than having things. Sometimes you hate to admit that you've been given so much. And I didn't want to leave the conclusion that you don't have to do anything, but I'm just saying I've had doors open to me that aren't open to other people because of the luck of birth.
Yeah.
Roulette is what I was thinking of.
Yes.
At my age, it takes a while.
I was going to say Wheel of Fortune.
but the truth is, in this world, we are getting so divided, not only economically with more billionaires and more homeless, which is terrible, but we're getting divided in our attitudes and in our acceptance levels. And I think we need to reverse that.
Yeah. Well, Bob, I think that concludes our episode. My last question for you is, if you were to have someone else come on this podcast, who would be your guest invite?
Oh, wow. who would I have come on?
Yes.
You're talking about national or local? Or
local.
Local. Well, our former mayor, Mike Coleman, his legacy will be a long lasting. I'd say he certainly is a difference maker in our community. Another person, there's several difference makers, but another person who I think would be a wonderful guest, his name is David Brown. David Brown started what's called the Harmony Group, which is now grown into hundreds of from all backgrounds to be part of a singing group. But that's the singing is really what you hear and see, but behind it is a service organization
too. Yeah.
And they go into prisons, for example, and they go around our city and help nonprofits. But David Brown, to me, is, I put him right up there as the person you'd like to meet.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate you so much. Sure. And that concludes our episode. Thank you so much for joining us. If you are coming back, we are so happy to see you again. And I can't wait to see you on the next episode. All right. Okay. Thank you so much.
That was
awesome.